This flash briefing was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Today is Wednesday, May the 8th, 2019. I'm Michael Morale, Director of Multichannel Content for SMA News Today. Madeline Collin, a 24-year-old activist, worries that patients like her will suffer deeply if Britain leaves the European Union, is scheduled at the end of the month. Collin is an expert on the subject. For her University of Bath dissertation, she analyzed Brexit's long-term impact on the 3.5 million people in England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales who have rare diseases, and concluded that nothing good will come of it. Until the Brexit vote in 2016, UK-based rare disease advocacy groups were always essential to the work of the EU, Collins wrote in her paper, which has not yet been published. However, she warned, Brexit, now set for March 29th, unless the British Parliament approves an extension with the approval of the EU's 27 other members, could undermine the work of those charities. Collins, who has Gaucher disease, wrote her dissertation about Brexit's impact on rare disease patients. This, she said, suggests that they will no longer be able to adequately represent the needs of patients at the European level and will lose their power to influence EU legislation. About 50 British patient advocacy groups currently belong to Eurodis, a Paris-based coalition of 837 smaller organizations that advocates for improved diagnosis of some 7,000 rare diseases and access to therapies to treat those illnesses. Through Eurodis, for example, in 2011, all British citizens gained the right to genetic testing that would help them learn whether they have the genes linked to inherited disorders. But now, instead of lobbying the EU, British rare disease advocates will be forced to lobby the British government, a daunting prospect given their recent failures in attempting to get the National Health Service to pay the cost of ultra-expensive drugs such as Spinraza for spinal muscular atrophy and Brineura for Batten disease. On March 6, a drug appraisal committee of Britain's National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, otherwise known as NICE, N-I-C-E, met in Manchester for the third and final time to decide whether to recommend Spinraza for reimbursement. Several hundred demonstrators organized by the nonprofit group Treat SMA staged a noisy protest on the steps of NICE's headquarters ahead of the meeting, but their efforts have led nowhere so far. The British government appears rather unresponsive to the plight of rare disease patients, who constitute less than 7% of the population, wrote Collins. She concluded that lawmakers in London are currently far too concerned with other domestic issues, such as unemployment and immigration, to listen to the worries of rare disease advocacy groups and patients. Of particular concern, according to Collins' report, is that once Britain finalizes its divorce from Brussels, drug makers, as well as the British government itself, will treat UK rare disease patients with far less urgency. That's because right now, those companies need only one license to sell a specific drug across the European Customs Union, which they obtain from the European Medicines Agency, otherwise known as the EMA. Post-Brexit, however, companies will have to apply for a separate license through the Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, the MHRA, making the process less lucrative since, obviously, the 64.5 million residents of Britain constitute a much smaller market than the 500 million people who live under EU jurisdiction as a whole. This will have an extremely negative effect on rare disease patients, who rely on pharmaceutical companies to provide them with their medications, Collins wrote. Without access to their medication, some patients could lose their lives. Ellen Half-Davies is the CEO of Aperito, a developer of wearable patient monitoring devices and a former scientific assessor in EMA's pediatric team. This is a devastating blow, Davies told BioNews Services, publisher of this website. We still don't know whether or not it'll be a hard Brexit, which would be the worst-case scenario. Davies, who worked as an EMA regulator for 6 years, spent 12 years before that as a pediatrician in London's Great Ormond Street Hospital. We already know that marketing authorizing holders in the UK will have to transfer to Europe to be registered, Davies said in an interview at the Second International Congress on Advanced Treatments and Rare Diseases, held March 4th and 5th in Vienna. What we don't know is the impact of the customs unions and whether or not we will be adopting same regulations exactly the way Switzerland does, or if additional processes will be required, Davies said. She added, pharma companies are not going to be interested in doing another marketing authorization application via MHRA, which they'd have to do if the EMA's authorization is no longer valid in the UK. In a soft Brexit scenario, it could be valid, but in a hard Brexit scenario, it would not be. Jane Spink, chief executive of Genetic Alliance UK, said that the EU has provided Britain's rare disease patients with invaluable provisions, including access to the EMA, as well as research funding, shared initiatives, and cross-collaborations. In a February 2018 opinion piece for the Financial Times, Spink pointed out that the MHRA accounts for 35% of the EMA's drug safety monitoring and about 40% of the evaluation of highly complex therapies. Nowhere has the value of a single market been seen more clearly than in the rare disease sector. Medicines for rare diseases and medical devices get a single authorization to be used in the EU, providing for cost-effective licensing and distributions of medicines for small populations, she said. Losing this leverage and the incentives of the centralized process could be the difference between UK patients being able to access a new treatment for rare diseases or not. Another real concern post-Brexit is the loss of crucial EU funding, without which British scientific researchers may no longer be able to finance clinical trials. It will require monumental action to make sure British patients don't suffer as a result, Davies said, adding that delays in accessing life-saving drugs are a real possibility. I'm afraid at this moment in time, we won't see any positive outcomes from it. As if all that's not enough, Collins said, British rare disease advocacy groups are incredibly worried that with fewer lucrative incentives and more stringent immigration controls in place, luring new medical talent to her country will be very difficult once Brexit is a reality. She went on to conclude her comments with the following statement, quote, very few individuals residing in the UK are capable of treating each individual rare disease. It is paramount, therefore, that Britain be able to attract as many specialists to the country as possible. End quote. Coming up next, perspectives from SMA News Today Community Development Manager, Kevin Schaefer.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploreGeneTherapy.com.
From Embracing My Inner Alien, a column by Kevin Schaefer, May 7th, 2019. If someone had told me a few years ago that I would love going to physical therapy every week, I would have laughed. Let's just say that the idea of letting other people stretch my arms and legs, contort my muscles into uncomfortable positions, and make me do any kind of physical exercise didn't exactly appeal to me. As I recounted in a previous column, the transfer process alone was enough to intimidate me. Still, my former primary doctor resisted my stubbornness and said that my muscles would stiffen past the point of no return if I didn't do something. Now here I am, almost 4 years later, and going to PT is one of my favorite weekly activities. I've talked to other adults with SMA who have expressed reluctance to doing physical therapy, for many of the same reasons that kept me from going. There's the time commitment, the inconvenience of having to transfer out of a wheelchair every appointment, and the uncertainty of whether or not PT will yield any benefits. All of these are valid concerns, but after 4 years of aquatic therapy, I've experienced the benefits firsthand. The time commitment. I won't deny that doing any kind of physical therapy requires commitment. When I started again as an adult, I was still in college. Trying to make time to get to a clinic 30 minutes from my house every week for an hour-long appointment, while also being a full-time student and heavily involved in campus life, was no easy task. Even today, when I work from home and have a more flexible schedule, it's still tough. I'm also in charge of coordinating rides so that my mom doesn't have to drive me regularly. The reality, though, is that we make time for the things that are important to us. Physical therapy has become a critical and enjoyable part of my life, and I'm willing to sacrifice the time and energy each week toward it. I figure that if I can make time to document my action figure collection on Instagram, I can probably make time to exercise in a pool once a week. The transfer process. Back when I started the process of aquatic therapy, transferring in and out of the pool was the thing I was most anxious about. I'm not big on letting other people, other than my parents and primary caregivers, transfer me, as I'm always worried that they'll do something wrong and send me flying out of my sling. I've gotten much better about this in recent years, but it remains a point of anxiety for me and many others in wheelchairs. In my experience, though, physical therapists have been the easiest people to communicate with, and none of those I've worked with have had any issues transferring me. I've worked with several PTs in the past few years, and though it often takes several tries to get me back in a manual wheelchair and out of the pool, each of them has listened to me, been supportive, and transferred me with care. The benefits. Recently, I had a conversation with one of my physical therapists about setting goals for my health and abilities. This question stunned me a bit, as it's not something I had given much thought. I love getting in the pool every week and chatting with my PTs about what we're watching on Netflix, but I really don't think about specific ways that I want to improve my physical ability. Now that I've been steadily going to therapy, however, and the fact that my sessions are coupled with my Spinraza treatments, I am thinking more about where I will be physically in a few years. I'm already experiencing some small gains in my muscle ability, and for the past couple months, I've even been able to sit unassisted on a bench that's built into the pool. Small developments like this are huge for me. I don't know exactly what I'll gain in the future, but I am seeing significant improvements in my muscle flexibility and energy levels these days. These changes haven't happened overnight, and it's important for others with SMA to understand that the benefits of physical therapy, or Spinraza, aren't instantaneous. It takes time and commitment to yield any kind of results. Physical therapy was once something that seemed pointless for me to try. My arms and legs are pretty much just for show, so why bother? Now I'm grateful for how persistent my doctor was with me a few years ago. The thing that I once dreaded is now something that I eagerly anticipate every week. Thanks, Doc. I'm Kevin Schaefer, Community Development Manager for SMA News Today.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.